wear my mask and wash my hands after going home.
It's a good tuna, but I think I paid too much.
I am the king of the ring.
Welcome to the Japan What Podcast, episode 147. I am your host, MatthewPMBigelow.com, covering AI markets in Japan, Japan Society 5.0, rising conflict in the Indo-Pacific, news analysis, and more, coming at you from the Tomihisa-cho studios in Shinjuku, Tokyo, Japan, the armpit of Asia. Welcome you to today's show. Got very busy things. We've got a lot of topics here. We're just gonna dive it in. How's your April going? Depending on when you're listening to this, let's take a look at. I don't usually cover tawdry topics, but this one is tawdry for a reason, and I want you to think about this. Is it? And this is gonna be. Is it a right conclusion or is it off the mark?
Is it
a right conclusion?
Or is it
off the mark? Now, I was reading this story from the Mainichi, Japan's national daily since 1922. And the only reason I'm covering it today was the reasoning that I came across, and it struck me as a little odd. And I don't usually cover these topics. It's not really something I think is worth talking about. Anyway, debt-laden Tokyo woman lured into overseas prostitution describes abuse by clients. We're not going to go too much into the vajayjay of weirdness here. A debt-laden Tokyo resident lured into prostitution in Macau for several days through an escort group, one of multiple such groups said to be operating in Japan, described to the Mainichi Shimbun her frightening experience of abuse suffered at the hands of her clients. Her cases of several of Japanese, in which Japanese women in overseas prostitution have found themselves in terrible situations, like being in prostitution. The woman in her 40s frequented a host club in the capital's Kabukicho Entertainment District and had accumulated a large debt. The host told her, quote, there are people who have earned as much as 8 million yen abroad, and introduced her to a man who claimed to be an overseas prostitution agent. She was shown multiple destinations and chose Macau. Her new workplace was a sauna shop. She spent time with clients in a private room adjacent to the saunas. Communication was often difficult. The woman explained, I always felt my life was in danger when I was with clients. She became ill after a few days and returned to Japan after a week after arriving in Macau. That's a weird sentence. All of her earnings were handed over to the agent, and some of the cash was likely given to the host as a finder's fee. Perhaps because she returned to Japan quickly, the woman was not even reimbursed for her airplane tickets. She said regrettably, and this is why this quote here is the reason I'm introducing this tawdry topic of international prostitution, the vajayjay of weirdness. Quote, I will never get into prostitution overseas again, end quote. I'll repeat that. I will never get into prostitution overseas again, end quote. So I read that and I thought, well, why is that overseas in there? Why not? Shouldn't this be the quote? I will never get into prostitution again, end quote. Why is it overseas? I will gladly enter prostitution domestically all the time from now. Like, count me in. I'm in it. All just domestically. Domestic whoredom is my future. But I am never stepping one inch outside of Japan's exclusive economic zone to engage in prostitution ever again in my life. I will never do overseas prostitution ever again. Promise. That makes me think about something that she's she's doing domestically. Doesn't that sound like something to you? Like maybe she's doing something domestically, like prostitution, but I could be wrong. Is it off the mark or is it reasonable? I can't remember what I said. Off the mark?
Oh, is it?
Reasonable. Very strange reasoning, isn't it? If I was that person's father, I would say, no, just prostitution. Just don't do prostitution. It doesn't have to be geofenced in any way. Just stop doing prostitution. Such a tawdry topic, isn't it? Even though it's on a lot of people's minds, it seems, because there seems to be a lot of money in it, doesn't there? Yes, it's a lot of money involved in being in the sex industry, the Mizu Shobai. All right, well, let's move on to the next topic here. We will begin today with just a very quick summary of some Japan Society 5.0 topics.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society.
What?
Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom.
Oh.
Society 5.0. A technology-based, human-centered society. Industrial revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face.
Oh.
It will, for example.
Okay, so that's Japan Society 5.0, the government's official vision for Japan to transform itself into a AI human-based society. They're very serious about it, by the way, and they keep marching on and on. And it started off as like, we're going to have drone delivery and AI medicine. Now it's gone into the SDG world, but we still have a lot of AI services cropping up more and more, and it's increasingly centralized and control-based. I prefer the decentralized AI topics. I went into quite a bit of it on last podcast, the appropriacy of when and where to implement artificial intelligence. And basically it's having a clear beginning and an end to where it is and what it's being used for, and not copying and pasting it into other applications, which is what I think a lot of people are doing, because they just think, it works good enough, but then it starts not working and then people start dying and a variety of other options. So let's just review some of the topics for right now, and we would be remiss if we did not cover them. We're not going to go too deep into it, but it says OpenAI to open its first Asia office in Tokyo this month, coming to us from the Nikkei Shimbun. This is just from the beginning of the month in April here, April 2024. ChatGPT developer OpenAI is set to launch its first Asian base with an office in Tokyo this month, intending to provide tailored corporate services and participate in creating a governance framework for the technology, Nikkei has learned. This is the Nikkei English, and it's a globalist op. They just really promote the globalist standard. So if you really want to know like what globalist elites are thinking, you just need to read a couple of paragraphs of a variety of Nikkei English newspaper articles, and you'll get a good idea. OpenAI has been showing interest in Japan. Chief Executive Sam Altman met Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida in Tokyo last April, a year after the American company unveiled ChatGPT, igniting a global frenzy around generative AI, and hinted at establishing an office in the country. Of course, OpenAI, originally founded by Elon Musk as a way to have open-sourced AI available to all, but then Elon Musk, I guess, left somehow, I can't remember, and then the company became obsessed with profits and being a kind of an OpenAI name only. And then now it's bought by Microsoft. So Microsoft is, in a way, just a services company. I don't want to go too much into it, but founded by Bill Gates. And Fumio Kishida is, of course, a big SDG guy, social development goals. And he received from Bill Gates an SDG award for promoting SDGs. So we have this kind of top of the top governance idea of AI with Microsoft, with Mr. Kishida, really cozying up to these types of people. And I think most Japanese prime ministers cozy up to these types of people. I don't know why Japan doesn't build a lot of this stuff itself. It's losing out more and more to these industries. But anyways, I thought that was interesting. I use ChatGPT a lot. I sometimes use them, but I use them less and less. And that's my experience with a lot of this generative AI, where I need a picture for something. Okay, it makes a picture for me. And it looks really interesting, but then the kind of deviates to a mean, M-E-A-N, like an average. So at first, the technology is like wild and interesting, but then as more and more people use it and as the company kind of nerfs the parameters, it eventually kind of gives you a middle-of-the-road example for everything that you need. And it's basically a new form of clip art that boring managers use to post up around the office to kind of jive the place up a bit. And ChatGPT, I'm sure, still has an amazing amount of use cases, especially for coding and so on and so forth. But there's like this high pickup rate and then a high drop-off rate. And I was using ChatGPT for translations, but then after a while, I'm like, well, I'll just translate it directly with the browser thing. The difference is not that much. And then I was also using it for music production, for tips for which frequencies to target or what type of compressor to use for what type of instrument. But eventually you kind of just figure that out. And so there's this kind of a thing where, okay, for coding or for managing teams, if you constantly have this need to use it, you will use it. But most people are like, wow, look at this amazing thing. And then everybody goes, look, it's amazing. It's AI. And then it just kind of drops off. But ChatGPT is still an amazing service, but for me, all of these companies using ChatGPT, are they just sending all of that data back to Microsoft services, which also has very deep connections to the CIA, doesn't it? Amazon, AWS was going to provide the CIA with its cloud-based computing services, but I think Microsoft ended up doing it. Microsoft, this is just off the dome from a few years ago, CIA... Cloud. Azure for the intelligence community. Azure, which is Microsoft's cloud-based services, empowers intelligence teams to achieve greater visibility, move faster, and make more informed decisions. Be future-ready with greater insight at the edge. CIA awards multi-billion cloud contract to AWS. CIA awards cloud computing with billions to firms, including, Microsoft, Azure, Google Cloud, IBM, and Oracle. So from a few years ago there, so this idea of me just kind of putting in like, hey, for my compressor, what do I need into OpenAI? And it goes back to Microsoft. Is that really so bad? But a whole bunch of Japanese off, I'm not sure what it means. I've talked to the CEO of a 5G company about it too, and he's kind of felt the same way. He's like, I'm not sure about sending all this stuff. Where's it going? We don't know where it goes. Next one. Japan RAD develops deep fake detection system, provides beta version for companies. Now, a lot of people have been saying deep fakes in the political year of 2024. We're going to see more and more AI involved with political swaying operations. Deep fakes and AI are actually relatively easy to detect for computers, and it's based on pixelation. So we might look at a face on a screen and go, that thing looks exactly real. But when you look at it from a pixelation perspective, which is what a computer can do because it's pixels on a screen, it will immediately identify like errors with biometric distances between eyes and ears. Or if somebody's doing a copy and paste job where they might want to make it look like 12 airplanes are flying across a sky. They can kind of look at the pixelization of the planes versus the background. Or in other cases, they can look at radar data, if they have access to the radar data to see how many planes were flying in that area at one time. Or they can also look at sunlight data in case people are just posting a ship like about to, you know, patrolling a beach, like a foreign Navy ship. And it's like, look at this foreign Navy ship. It's over there. And oh my God, what's it doing? Well, if the sunlight data is available, it can kind of analyze where the ship is at that time of day and look at the shadows on the ship and quickly determine whether or not that was likely a fake or not. So it might look realistic. And as most people are scrolling on their phones or not really looking at shadow data in the imagery that they're looking at, people could easily be fooled. But this has existed from the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, from the U.S. side for about 5, 6, 7 years now. And it's specifically used for military in intelligence operations to detect what's real and what's fake being spread online or through social networks. So if somebody posts some picture, look, there's a ship and my God, what's it doing there? Everybody starts talking about it, sets a threshold. The AI looks at it. Well, that looks real, but look at the sunlight, look at the weather data. That's going to be a fake, something like that. Those systems exist, those analytic systems. And of course, ideally, that image with that reasoning would then be sent to like a group of experts or a group of military commanders who would look at that image and then decide, yes, the AI is right, or yes, the AI is wrong, because you don't want the AI finalizing the decisions on these types of things. So this technology has existed for a while, but Japan is also trying to get on board. And it says Nippon Rad. This comes to us from Japan, ZDNet.com, and I'm translating it from Japanese. Nippon Rad has received a patent and software license for deepfake detection technology from the University of Tokyo and has begun offering SeekFake, a beta version of a web service that allows anyone to easily detect deepfake images and videos. That's very different from DARPA. DARPA is pretty closed in those regards. This technology is the result of research by the Yamazaki Laboratory at the University of Tokyo. As of June 2022, it has achieved top-class detection accuracy compared to similar technologies. Image generated using SBIs, or self-blended images, a new pseudo-fake image generation method, are trained by deepfake detection AI as fake images. This makes it possible to detect fake images, which are difficult to detect with conventional methods, with high versatility and robustness. For the time being, SeekFake, is like a weird German letter in there, provided by Nippon Rad, will be provided free of charge to corporate users as a beta version. Applications are required for accounts, and the launch is limited to corporations and public organizations. The company plans to consider expanding the service to the general public while verifying feedback. Again, I like this idea. It's very specific, very targeted, very tailored. This comes to us from 2024, April 5th at 1:40 in the afternoon. And again, deepfake detection for all. Why the hell not? Maybe you can help your gran out when she points out at a video, oh my God, Shinzo Abe has revived from the dead. He's resuscitated and he's going to change the constitution. No, grandma, look. That's a deepfake. Oh, thank you. That's exactly how it goes. Another quick one for today. And this, again, is a startup based in Tokyo here. Let me just get it translated. This has to do with challenging Tesla. And now with the yen in its precarious situation right now and the Japanese economy not doing very well despite the stocks, I'm hoping for more domestic production of things and having more available to me and my kids and my family and ideally the rest of Japan, available via domestic production and domestic companies. Japan, up until the release of the smartphone, had a lot of the technology markets cornered. And then after that, it relied on a lot of imports of technology. But it would be great to see just like more domestic stuff produced domestically for domestic use cases. I'm tired of everything needing to be like a Chinese produced foam that can be used in Nigeria and all that. Let's localize a little bit here. Next is a mass production of fully self-driving EVs from Japan, surpassing Tesla. And this is just a quick interview from X-Tech, Nikkei.com, but it's the Japanese Nikkei, meaning it's not as globalist as the English version, which is just full of batshit craziness. Kazunari Yamamoto is the developer of Ponanza, the strongest shogi software that has defeated masters. His career has shifted to the automotive industry, where he aims to develop fully self-driving EVs. He is aiming to go beyond Tesla with Turing, a company he founded with self-driving researchers. We overtake Tesla. The startup was founded in 2021 and it develops the EVs. The company it's just repeating. It's a weird Japanese journalism way of doing things. They aim to produce 10,000 units by 2030. So they aim to become a complete car manufacturer that not only develops self-driving AI, but also manufactures the car body itself. In February 2023, Turing launched their first in-house factory, Turing Kashiwa Nova Factory in Kashiwa City, Chiba Prefecture. It is scheduled to produce the first 100 self-driving EVs in 2025 and will serve as the base for that production. By 2030, ding, 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 SDGs, the company aims to produce 10,000 fully autonomous EVs without a steering wheel. I'd like to see the steering wheel in there, please. But some people say, well, you redesign the entire interior by having the car is now a self-driving car. Now you don't need the driver's seat with the passenger seat and then the rear seats. The seats could be facing each other. It could just be a bed in there for all I care, whatever. So the idea is that you can customize the interior of a fully self-driving autonomous vehicle. Current cars are not designed to be optimized for autonomous driving. So we thought we would need to work on manufacturing the car bodies ourselves. The CEO said, quote, if there is an automaker that we can work with a sense of speed, we would like to actively partner with them. I'm going to finish it there. It goes on. I'll be posting that up onto MatthewPMBigelow.com, which is where you can go to find all the articles, donation ideas, and photos and more. It's all on MatthewPMBigelow.com. I just thought that was interesting, and I did this research in Japanese and then just used software to translate it into English, because a lot of the English companies, the newspapers, don't understand AI at all, and they've always viewed it as some Hollywood type of thing where they can just sort of sit back and pontificate instead of doing the actual research. But it seems that there are more and more people go-getting the technology. And I'm not sure what I think about fully self-driving EVs on the road. If they're in their own lanes and they go a certain speed, what do I fucking care? But if they're driving down the road with my kids playing in front of them, well, then it becomes quite a different situation, doesn't it? All right. Anything else for Japan Society 5.0 for today? Last one. AWS, Amazon Web Services, invests $15 billion into Japan's data ecosystem amidst AI boom. This AI boom in Japan is partly coming from the conflict or potential conflict in Taiwan, and investors get really sensitive about conflict, and Japan is presenting itself as a very safe and reliable place with its plans to restart a lot of its nuclear production or nuclear power plants. It could provide a lot of energy, which is required for AI data systems and data ecosystems. So AWS might be taking some of that money, could have been saving for China, and putting it into Japan. But regardless, Japan is becoming a kind of a new hub for chip manufacturing and for data centers as well. And AWS and Japan have been getting along for quite a long time now. So it's interesting that that relationship continues to grow. So just as interesting there, $15 billion ain't no slim amount of pickings there, is it? That's a sizable chunk of change. Wish I could get some of that. Imagine if you only had $5 billion, what would you do? Would you never engage in international prostitution again?
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society. Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0, a technology-based, human-centered society. The fourth industrial revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face. It will, for example, free us from the stress of driving, allowing us to safely visit anyone, anytime. We will have access to the latest medical advancements at a low cost, no matter where we are. AI and robots will enhance human ability and expand our infinite possibilities, helping us enjoy more fulfilling lives. Society 5.0.
None of these things are coming
true. To the betterment
true.
Of human lives.
It's all. Oh, well, whatever. We tried our best, I guess. Just billions of dollars down the drain. We're going to take a look at the supply chain war.
Die for the war. Everybody moves. Die for the good. For the good. Die for the war. Die for the war.
Supply chains. It's the war. That's how I vision it. This started, I believe, with COVID-19 when China shut down Wuhan. Wuhan was a major manufacturing hub for cybersecurity, telecoms, chip manufacturing, automobile. There was this node in the global supply chain network that was crucial for a lot of things getting done. Wuhan is the Chicago, apparently, of China, but it's a very advanced place with a lot of advanced technologies and, of course, a lot of advanced virus researching as well. So when China shut down Wuhan, I looked at Wuhan and I was surprised to learn all of those things. And then as the COVID crisis went on and our supply chains went really crazy, I noticed that China was kind of promoting its Belt and Road Initiative as an alternative, while also hoarding a lot of the supply chain, the supply containers, the shipping containers. And I believe that a large part of COVID-19 was China reconfiguring its supply chain networks. And their Belt and Road Initiative is a global domination plan to use their technology for the delivering of goods and services all across the world. And I've used this example a lot, but you have a person in Beijing and they open their Huawei phone and they go to a commerce app and they buy some beans from some African farmer, and that gets loaded into the database and the government knows about it, which is a big part of this. And a ship leaves from Beijing or Guangzhou through China's supply chain networks to an African port operated by Chinese AI forklifts and shipping container facilities, and takes a shipping container, puts it on a train. That train is also operated by China, and it goes up to a train station up in the African mountains, which is also built and operated by China. Then the farmers there, with all of their orders that were placed on, were placed by various people in China, they put those orders on into the containers. Then that train goes back down to the ship and brings everything back to the people of China. And this is all done with the Chinese EUAN or the ECNY. And the ships are operated by Chinese shipping companies, and they're tracked by Chinese satellites, and the satellites and the ships are connected via the internet, and Chinese AI systems are used to monitor the ships to and from Africa and China. And then they are backed up by the Chinese People's Liberation Army Navy. It's this idea where China can upset the global supply chain networks. And instead of competing against the US dollar by floating the renminbi, the Chinese yuan, onto international markets, it just eventually sucks more and more people into using the Chinese currency naturally, and then eventually replacing it de facto without having to compete directly against the US dollar. That's just an idea, very elaborate idea, but when you look at China's unrestricted warfare policies and their ideas of moving forward, we have these ideas of supply chain wars. Now, Japan is not involved with this Belt and Road Initiative at all. If you look at the maps for the Belt and Road Initiative, Japan's not part of it. And in fact, Japan, as part of the G7 and as kind of like a subordinate to the United States in terms of military, there's a lot of military bases from the United States in Japan. Japan is very reliant on American security for its own existence. So in terms, and of course, the idea behind the supply chain networks prior to COVID was that America had the Navy to ensure the safety for the supply chain networks to operate as usual, but that is no longer the case, it seems. So the idea that Japan is on the opposite side of this is definitely true. They are within the United States umbrella terms. And as the conflict heats up between the multipolar world, the emerging empires of China, Russia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, North Korea, versus the G7, Japan is more and more being incorporated into a buffer zone against the Asia Pacific expansion of its rival supply chain system. And this, of course, involves teaming up more and more with American military services. But as we've seen in the past, 15, 20 years, I'm not sure how wise it is to team up with American military services. Their operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, not very good. Withdrawing from Afghanistan, what does that say about America as an ally? In addition, with the kind of the woke joke aspect that a lot of American military has become, their chief of, you know, the commanders and a lot of the generals are like, we need to understand white rage so that we don't become supremacists. You're like, well, what are you talking about? I guess that's a thing, but is it? I don't, it doesn't, the chief of commanders, black dude, the number two guy is a white dude. Aren't these things kind of solving each other out? But anyways, that's what they're really focusing on, and having transgender a lot into their upper echelons. I just mean to say, you can be the number one transgender and be the number one of anything, but it just seems to be that they're pushing these people into these positions of power, not necessarily by race, but by a lot of these sexual minorities, just to have them there so that they have visibility. But that takes so much of the resource and functionality out of a smooth operating organization by falsely adjusting the levers. To have all of these, suddenly all of these people in these positions of power, it makes me go, well, which side of this supply chain do you want to be on? Where's the future here? Totalitarianism in China backed with a social credit system and their very functional supply chains, or people who are kind of turning into a woke joke promising to protect your supply chains while the world runs away from them because they don't understand how weird they are. Anyways, let's take a look today at some of the military aspects of the supply chain wars. Japan designates 5 airports and 11 seaports for use by SDF and JCG. And SDF means, of course, the Jietai, or the Self-Defense Forces. Japan plans to upgrade 5 civilian airports and 11 seaports for use by the Self-Defense Forces and the Japan Coast Guard, that would be the JCG, to bolster the nation's defense capabilities. The 16 facilities and 7 prefectures were designated as specified use airports and seaports on April 1st. The central government has obtained consent for the upgrades from the local governments concerned. For the current fiscal year, $244 million were earmarked to extend runways and improve berths to accommodate SDF and JCG aircraft and vessels. The 5 airports are Kitakyushu, Nagasaki, and Fukui, as well as Naha and Miyazaki areas. The 11 seaports, well, I'm not going to read them all, but the plan to develop public infrastructure facilities such as airports and seaports to strengthen defense was spelled out in the National Security Strategy of Japan, which was established in 2022. It kind of goes on from there. So it's the idea of bolstering Japan's ports and airports for defense purposes, which could be very useful if China attacks Taiwan. We're going to need those areas. So that's just one idea of the supply chain war, is configuring our ports and airports for more defense and military purposes. And then, of course, that requires a lot of supply chain just to get it done, and a lot of supply chain to fund and supply those areas. Next one is linking to that idea. Again, this comes to us from Nikkei Asia English, meaning globalist talking point establishment media. Japan needs hulls in the water to defend Red Sea, Armitage report. So why do we need all these ports in Japan and airports in Japan to accommodate more Japan Coast Guard and Jiaitai vessels? Well, if we're going to be supplying, if the international community wants Japan to put its ships into the Red Sea, we might need more facilities to support that. This was written by Ken Moriyasu, Nikkei Asia diplomatic correspondent, April 5th, 2024. The Western world is looking to Tokyo to uphold the free and open international order,
New World Order,
in ways that it has never before, a bipartisan group of Japan analysts in Washington said in a report released Thursday. This is essentially so at a time of U.S. political uncertainty. In 2000, a bipartisan group of Japan hands compiled a report that was meant to serve as a roadmap for the incoming George W. Bush administration. I'm not going to read that, but this year's report called for Japan to strengthen cooperation in the Middle East. Quote, despite Japan's heavy dependence on sea lanes from the Middle East, Tokyo has been notably absent from the international response to terrorist attacks on commercial shipping in the Red Sea, end quote, the report said. Leveraging the Self-Defense Forces facility in Djibouti, which is a small African country located in the Red Sea facing Iran, I believe. China has some pretty significant bases there too. Japan should play a larger and more visible role in defending the commercial sea lanes, the authors said. So you might be thinking, why is this man, MatthewPMBigelow.com, talking about supply chain wars and then talking about having ports in Japan servicing SDF and JCG vessels? Well, in another report, it's saying that we need to have those facilities, those resources, monitoring places that are going through massive amounts of conflict at the moment. The Red Sea with the Houthis shooting missiles, and the not too far away from there is the Hamas-Israel war. And then that the amount of disruption going on in the supply chain routes at the moment in that zone is off the chain, causing lots of firms to reroute their ships around Africa or to not go in those areas at all. So now Japan needs a more of a presence there. Boots on the ground were symbolic phrases for such actions. This year's report noted that Japan has come a long way. This means that it means Japan's all in. So the Nikkei English is the globalist talking point, meaning if Japan is going to come over to the Red Sea, that's just the first step. Quote, the partnership today was almost imaginable at the time of the author's first report in the year 2000. The U.S.-Japan alliance has never been more important, the article says, and Japan's role in supporting a free and open international order,
New World Order,
grounded in the rule of law, is therefore more important than ever, the report said. Japan and South Korea should move purposefully and promptly to normalize bilateral defense relations through a first-ever joint security declaration, the report also suggested. And then it goes on from there. I thought that was a very interesting article and very telling, because you read that first article. Where was that first article from about the SDF? That was from Asahi.com, and it mentions really nothing about the Middle East. Nope. And Houthis? Nope. Nothing like that. But then you read another article and it's like, well, if the international community, New World Order, is asking Japan to defend the supply chains in the Red Sea, maybe there's a connection there. Another one is AUKUS. That means Australia, UK, US. It's like a marine consortium of nations that aim to produce submarines that aren't being made. Anyways, it weighs expanding security pact with Japan to deter China. That comes to us from the Financial Times. I'm not going to go too much into it, but it might become JAWKIS. It's been in the media for a while now, but it just means it's further evidence of the international world order, expecting Japan to integrate with it to protect the sea lanes as the Belt and Road Initiative goes forward. And we're going to talk about that in a bit too. Upgrade eyed for U.S. Forces Japan commander sources. U.S. experts urge revamp of military command architecture with Japan. And Kishida, ahead of U.S. trip, seeks stronger military ties with Washington and other partners. So since Kishida became prime minister after Abe was assassinated, shot in the street, he's really pivoted towards less independent Japan and more subservient Japan to America's needs or America's demands or America's international new world order. And we can really see that with the way of since Abe. Abe was more like, he was very much a, he would go with the globalist, with the World Economic Forum people and meet with them and do all that. So it's not like Mr. Abe is some a golden eagle flying in the sky of like, hey, Japan. He was, but then he wasn't. But Kishida is even more so on board with just meeting U.S. demands. The guy he's the Justin Trudeau of Asia, to be honest. He doesn't have my support, but I'm just a gaijin in Japan, so what the hell do I know? So we have this idea of U.S. forces, experts urge revamp of military command architecture with Japan. This comes to us from JapanToday.com. We're not going to read too much into it. I'm just trying to highlight a variety of news articles and how they might relate with each other. And they don't really cover each other. They don't really mention each other or connect any of these dots. Like some sort of psycho in an apartment with a bunch of red yarn pinning things into photos and making lines between them and whatever. A bipartisan group of influential U.S. policy experts on Thursday, April 5th, unveiled a set of proposals to build a more integrated partnership between their country and Japan amid a challenging security environment, with one key pillar being a transformation of the decades-old alliance of military and command and control architecture. Supply chains. Under the circumstances, they proposed the United States and Japan take the next step to, quote, that was a quote, to work towards, quote, an alliance that is more integrated from planning and executing military operations to linking economic and security concerns. This is the Belt and Road Initiative response. I believe so. This is the supply chain wars, including by coordinating industrial policy and promoting secure supply chains. It's right there in the article. Finding it right there. Aside from taking effective and collective steps to deal with China's support of domestic industry, so it mentions China, via massive subsidies, as well as strengthening supply chains of key materials, the authors recommended that the United States and Japan consider expanding the Group of Seven, the G7 nations, to include Australia and South Korea. The report concluded with one warning for the alliance's future, saying that it is imperative to stem a recent dramatic decline in the number of U.S. and Japanese studying in each other's countries, and it goes on from there. Anyways, very interesting, I found. And then this all comes ahead of Kishida going to the U.S., which is also very typical to kind of frame the argument so that certain things get discussed and then other things do not get discussed based on the amount of signal to noise with this type of news reporting going on and being shared and being podcasted about. So it looks innocuous when you first read that Japan designates 5 airports, 11 seaports for use by SDF. But then you read another article about Japan needing to supply more of its self-defense forces ships into the Red Sea to protect the supply chains. And then we need to deter China, which is expanding its military to protect its own supply chains by having Japan join the Australia, UK, US alliance there. And then with all of that considered, the US wants to expand its military to include more collaboration with the Japan aspects of the military alliance that's going on here. But then it all goes back to what I said at the beginning. What is the military in the United States even doing? Can we count on them? They pulled out of Afghanistan just like that overnight, left a massive vacuum of power there. And now the Taliban's back in power and is not going away. There's this idea where what kind of United States are we dealing with right now? Is Joe Biden ain't running anything over there? I don't know what that guy's, he's not thinking of any. Is he thinking of anything? Can his thoughts repeat with any cohesion over a 24-hour period? Or is it just when you're kind of laying back and letting your mind wander? Is that the entire head of the United States policy decision-making right now? I don't think so. He's basically, I've heard somebody called Michael Young call him a condom for the CCP and the WEF. Is this the United States we should be dealing with right now? Because it's just going to be like, now you need more diversity in your military. Is that going to be the result? We need more diversity in your supply chains. Please hire more LGBTQ people to run your military. Otherwise, you're bad. Is that what's going to happen? We don't know, because there's this idea of like America, blah, 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 World War II, victors, economic powerhouse. But then there's the new America. We're like, I don't know what's going on there. Not sure if I like it or if I want it. But then most Japanese people don't even know about this new America. They don't even know at all, They just kind of go, oh, look, that's the leader. Looks like we're going to be strong, committed partners in the Indo-Pacific together, and everything's going to be hunky-dory. But nobody in Japan is like, what happened with Afghanistan? You know, that 20-year-long military alliance where they had a democracy over there and more women studying. What happened? Oh, the U.S. just pulled out, left all their weapons behind, and let the totalitarian government just reemerge and take over the place and hasn't talked about it since? Well, that's a good military partner to have. Let's edge closer with them and merge more with them. Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Die for the war, everybody moves. Die for the good, die for the war, die for the war.
Let's take a look quickly at China. Cambodia getting a China-backed game-changing canal. Yeah, they're tired of playing games on the old canal. They want to play new games on a new canal. Bangkok. This goes back to the Belt and Road Initiative. Cambodia wants to divert Southeast Asia's Mekong River into a planned $1.7 billion Chinese-financed shipping canal to reach a deep-sea port near Cambodia's Gulf of Thailand coast. The Funan Techo Canal would enable Cambodians to be, quote, breathing through their own nose, said newly elected Prime Minister Hun Manet, son and heir to longtime authoritarian Prime Minister Hun Sen. Cambodia, for the first time, could import and export goods by ship from its capital, Phnom Penh's port, via the canal to a would-be deep water port in Kep province on the Gulf of Thailand, opening onto the South China Sea. Ships to and from Hong Kong, Singapore, and other ports could reroute or add shipping lanes to access the canal. Shipping containers from those ocean-going vessels would be transferred by cranes at KEP to and from canal barges. China, by the way, has automated ports and automated cranes now for the ports, so you wouldn't need to have a bunch of lazy Cambodians doing the job. A successful Chinese-financed canal would also deepen Beijing's economic, diplomatic, and other links with Phnom Penh while lessening Cambodians' dependence on Hanoi, Vietnam. I'm going to leave it there. I just wanted to highlight an aspect of the Belt and Road Initiative. So instead of saying you need more trans people in your military, China's like, we're going to build this giant canal and you're going to benefit from it. I would say Cambodia, build your own canal and then you would benefit from it even more. But that's just one idea. And the next one is China launches blockchain project for Belt and Road Initiative. Now, the blockchain gets a lot of bad press, and it should, because a lot of the crypto pump and dumpers, shit coins as they were, really gave it a bad name. But blockchain can just be an open ledger, if you want to think about it that way, where one person is not in control of the ledger. Everybody can look at the ledger and see what's happening in the ledger, and it can make processes speed up without having to rely on people opening the book and showing each other the book and so on and so forth. And if something gets changed, it gets logged. The Chinese, this goes also back to the idea of the Belt and Road Initiative for China, is a way to incorporate more nations into its payment systems without having to float the Chinese RMB against the dollar, but provide an ecosystem where more and more countries or companies opt into the Chinese supply chain networks and therefore embolden China's supply chains themselves. Remember, this is a supply chain war. That's how I view it, and I view it like that, not as a way to have a hot take, but that's just the way I view it. The Chinese government released its latest blockchain project titled Ultra Large Scale Blockchain Infrastructure Platform for the Belt and Road Initiative. Well, this comes to us from CryptoPlus.com. Probably a bunch of crypto shitheads in charge there, but when it comes to China and its Belt and Road Initiative and its e-commerce aspects of it, for them to have a blockchain component to that is a big deal. Spearheaded by Conflux Network, this project aims to establish a robust public blockchain infrastructure platform. The launch was announced at a meeting held to discuss key research and development plans, which took place on March 30th at the Shanghai TreeMap Blockchain Research Institute. According to the Chinese government, the primary objective of the project is to address the unique characteristics and requirements of the Belt and Road transnational cooperation scenario. The Belt and Road Initiative is a transnational cooperation effort led by China that aims to drive economic and political collaboration across participating countries. It goes on from there. I'm not going to go too much into it, but the idea that a lot of people say, oh, the Belt and Road Initiative is failed because they've stopped spending billions and billions of dollars on new infrastructure. Well, maybe their infrastructure is in place or planned to be constructed right now, and now they're focusing on the next level of the Belt and Road Initiative, which would be payments, processing, getting people on board where you could exchange Cambodian currency for Chinese currency directly through a blockchain-type payment system. And this is, of course, de-dollarization as well, because China does not want to incorporate the U.S. dollar into its envisioned global domination scenario. The last one for China, a couple more. Actually, we'll just do one more. China. Costco and China shipping merger plan receives Beijing approval. So you've probably seen Costco ships, not the American, you know, cheap place where Kirkland products are sold. Costco is a shipping company owned by China. The long-awaited merger plan between Costco and China Shipping, China's two largest shipping conglomerates, has finally received the go-ahead from China's State Council. A preliminary scheme will likely be disclosed by the listed units of the pair on Friday. Yeah, this is like if Walmart and Costco merged together. Something of that scale. The fusion of the pair on block would create a behemoth. With total assets of around $84.2 billion. So no joke there. That's a lot of money. In container shipping, the new group CCSG will become the world's fourth largest operator with a market share of 7.8%, according to statistics from Industrial Securities. So the idea that China is easing off of its ambitions for supply chain is actually not going away. And if you have fewer companies in a centralized AI system, it makes for easier things to fewer fail points through that service. All right, I'm going to leave it there. All right, anything else? So that's China for today. We only have time for a couple more news articles, and then it's going to be sayonara until next time. We covered that. Supply chain war. Should we do a little bit more de-dollarization? Yeah, okay. Let's do a little bit more de-dollarization. Here we go. we'll piggyback onto the last topic of China is developing its own ecosystem, but BRICS as well is developing a separate ecosystem. So the Chinese ecosystem is, I think they want to take over the entire BRICS ecosystem with their supply chain network, because Brazil, Russia, India, China, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, all these countries, they're going to need a supply chain to glue them together. But for the time being, Russia is a major factor in this, because it supplies the necessary resources to China to develop these systems and make them happen. And this comes to us from watcher.guru. Russia doubles gold and foreign currency to uproot U.S. dollar. BRICS is the largest buyer of gold in 2023 as members accumulated tons of the precious metal, reported the World Gold Council. China alone purchased 225 tons of gold, while Russia, India, Brazil, and South Africa came next in line. Reports suggest that BRICS could back their soon-to-be-released currency with gold to take on the U.S. dollar. I include this with the Japan What podcast because if we see a rising competitor and they have more safety and investors prefer that, we're going to see our own supply chains become a lot more scarce. We're going to see the ability to purchase things not be as easy as before, and the valuation of our currencies within that system as a comparative system increases in percentage of market share. We're going to lose more and more of our influence, or buying influence in such cases. So things like coffee, chocolate, et cetera, will go up. I talked a lot about that on last week's podcast. Russia announced on Thursday that it is now doubling its accumulation of gold and local currencies moving forward. The country's finance minister, Anton Siluvanov, confirmed that they will double the acquisition of gold and foreign currencies. The development comes at a time when BRICS is looking to stop using the U.S. dollar for cross-border transactions, and so on from there. Wow, big news there. So just some further evidence. But the final news for today will be from Crypto Potato. Everything hot in crypto. I hate crypto, actually. Bitcoin, I'm fascinated with. Blockchain as a layer is very interesting to me. But crypto overall, just so douchey. But anyways, this comes to us from March 19th, 2024. Month old, but I didn't know about this. Japan's $1.5 trillion pension fund eyes Bitcoin amidst surging market. Japan is very Bitcoin adverse, especially its traditional and conservative sectors. But the fact that the largest pension fund in the world is eyeing it, to me, is indicative of looking at potential alternatives to standard investment options. Founded in 2006, what is GPIF? The Japan's Government Pension Investment Fund is the largest pool of retirement savings in the world. The administrative agency established by the Japanese government has announced fresh long-term investment strategies. They're initiating a comprehensive five-year investigation scheme aimed at identifying efforts to broaden investment horizons. The pension fund has called for data with regard to various potential diversification tools, and so on and so forth. But anyways, they're interested in the crypto, not crypto, but Bitcoin aspects as well. So we're going to take it easy. What is that? That's this one right here. I'm running out of time, so I'm moving quickly.
Here we go.
All right, that's going to be the podcast for today. Thank you for listening to the news analysis and more. You can go to Japan Today. Oh, sorry, what am I talking about? Go to MatthewPMBigelow.com. MatthewPMBigelow.com is the website where you can get the links, photos, sources, and more. Some donations ideas there as well. PayPal.me/JapanWUT. That's all we have time for today. So from the Tomihisacho Studios in Shinjuku, Tokyo, Japan, I bid thee, Mr. Listener or Ms. Listener, please don't ever engage in international prostitution. It's just not a good idea. A very heartful and warmful ja mata ne.